Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the world, I wouldn't say world famous, but world only Mod State podcast.
It better be.
Yeah, well, at this point, it's around the world. I don't know if it's world famous, but it isn't until I see a bumper sticker or a sticker somewhere that we did not create and sitting somewhere on a, I don't know, light pole or something. But either way, before we dive into this, as always, for those of you who are foreign and domestic listening to this podcast, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Keep listening to what on whatever platform you're listening on. And as always, head over to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces, as well as links, as well as links to the podcast. My friend, how are you?
I'd be a lot better if our national soccer team players could stay on the field, if Soylent Green wasn't people, you know, if we weren't worried about, you know, things being said.
Well, we don't have to worry about collusion anymore, apparently.
But it's going to get talked about just at least every other day. The witch hunt tweets are going to continue.
That's probably true.
Right after the daily recap of the 2016 election.
That's a little tiring, I'll give you that. But it at least there's it's a chapter at a minimum ended. So
it's like living a Politicon version of Hey Jude. It just keeps on going
and going. Well, we're not here to talk about collusion or obstruction. We're here to talk.
Beatles.
What are we here? The Beatles? We're not here to talk
about
the Beatles.
Them.
Hey, let's roll into. Look, we're going to talk about some Golan Heights, and it was something that was brought up briefly. There's a couple things surrounding the sort of. Pronouncement by the President of the United States. It is true that the current President, Prime Minister, President of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, is up for re-election under some interesting circumstances. I believe he was charged with corruption, so it's sort of looming over his head. So his chances for re-election probably are. He's still probably going to be reelected. However, it's going to be not by as wide of margins as it normally has been. But Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, certainly handed him a huge win last week when he essentially conceded the fact that Israel should hold the rights or have the territory of the Golan Heights, which is in northern Israel on the Syrian border.
To the millennials out there, don't get excited. This isn't about the Golan Heights, okay? This isn't... Some timeless pop culture discussion.
Well, and to set this all up, because the whole point here being, yes, this was handed, this win was handed to Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu right before an election by the President of the United States, who has been very pro-Israel.
Collusion!
And look, I'm neither really left or right on this. I'm certainly not pro-Israel in terms of their...
I know.
But it's weird because being pro-Israel, it's just... There's so much division around pro... I mean, I can truly look at Israel as in terms of its national security or foreign... policy issues and not agree with what they're doing, but it certainly doesn't make me not like Jews. I mean, this is where this has gotten down to the point where if you're anti-Israel, or not Israel, you're anti-Semitic, or the other way around, you're some sort of Zionist if you're pro-Israel, and you hate Arab people.
Why should this issue be any different?
Really what this boils down to, it is not me being pro-Israel, it's not me being anti-Israel, it's not me being pro-Palestinian. What concerns me more about the Golan Heights is in terms of Israel did annex that area after the Seven-Day War. And they've held it for quite a while, and it is a very strategic point. I mean, it is a sort of mountainous region in northern Israel overlooking Syria, and I realize that Syria is a friggin' wasteland right now and has a lot of weird characters in there vying for influence. But aside from all of that, because I really don't have a better solution.
Look, they invaded Israel. What they lost as a result of that invasion, I mean, I'm sorry? That's the way war works?
Yeah. And like I said, I don't really see a better solution. Now,
well, there's geopolitical issues that arise from this, but that's a separate issue.
So that is where I fundamentally have some issues with it, is sort of the geopolitical issues that arise from doing this. And so it doesn't make me pro-Israel. It doesn't make me pro-Palestinian. It doesn't make me anti-anything. It really makes me more concerned about the future precedent of it. It puts, in the way I look at it, is it puts the United States in a precarious situation when, in terms of the precedent to annexed regions in the world, to really say no, we don't. You know, I think it's very easy for Russia.
Well, except that Crimea didn't invade Russia.
No, but Russia
still gained this territory because they were invaded.
Yes, so there's. It does create an interesting precedent for other countries that would like to annex or have annexed territory. I mean, how do you say no to one when a huge chunk of the world and even the UN takes issue with what Israel does in that region? It just pits a lot of players against each other in terms of whether or not you think... sort of validating a country's right to an area, it creates an interesting precedent. It's not black and white. I think that the majority of the world, when they see Russia trying to annex Crimea, says that that's the wrong thing to do. There's a general consensus that that's the wrong thing to do.
Well, again, though, Russia is the aggressor in that situation.
Yes, I get that.
Israel was invaded.
But but Israel was also created. As well, it was given to the Jewish community, to the biblically the Israelites. It was given, so it wasn't
the parallel. I'm not sure how that affects the comparison, though, in the sense that it is the state of Israel.
I mean, regardless of force, like military force, Israel wasn't created by military force, but it was created, and it was created less than 100 years ago. Whether it was taken by force or not, I guess my thing is, biblical prophecies aside, is it not hard to realize why people in that region would be pissed off that the world would just come in and be like, yeah, this is yours now, not yours, this is yours now, this is these their people, they get this now, like why that's like eminent domain, like why do you think libertarians get so pissed off when President Trump wants to build a wall through private property down south? I mean, it's really no different.
It's not as though we moved a bunch of Eskimos in there, though, and declared it their state.
But there's
historical precedent for this.
Yes, there is. However,
the Jews are Mississippians.
No, I do get that. However, who's to say that, again, is whether they were there a long time ago or not, it's sort of like you're saying, you're like by force, right? It is what it is. They lost that.
I think a big portion of it, and I know you acknowledge this, was it was a result of what had happened in World War II. I feel like that played an inexorable part in this, and that we're talking about an ethnicity that had been hunted.
Yes, but they weren't hunted from Israel. It wasn't as if that they were taken
where they were, though. That's what I mean. Isn't that the idea?
Yeah, that is. But I think what's interesting is that, look, and I don't mean to be insensitive one bit, it's hard to not sound insensitive when I do this. However, there's been number of ethnic minorities that have been hunted or have been had not maybe to the extent of the Holocaust. That have there's been ethnic cleansing, and the case for Israel is that what we did different from most other ethnic cleansings is that we created a state for them. We said, you go here now. This is yours. And almost like reparations for what happened. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying the aftermath of the
entire... You wish we could do it for more groups of people?
No, it's not even that. I'm just saying that it creates, in terms of precedent, like, hey, Russia took this place by force. That's different. It's apples and oranges. Well, is it really? I mean, other than they rolled tanks into the region, we gave this region to people and displaced other people. And it's not that different. And blood was still shed by people who were pissed off that it happened. And
there were good people on both sides, huh?
Good people on both sides, man. It's just, you know, I wish in my mind it was, because I really don't have a dog in the fight, to be honest with you. Like, it really
you
doesn't.
Should.
It
you really should doesn't, have a dog in the fight of the only stable democratic republic in the Middle East.
Yes. I realize that in terms of allyship, it is.
I'm not making a religious argument. Notice that?
No, you're not at all. Because I will discount any religious argument, and not because I'm right or wrong. It's just because I don't want to hear it. It doesn't fit in my whole geopolitical framework.
What, half off?
What's that?
To what, half off? I mean,
it's just I appreciate you not making, because I think the importance of this is far more the non-biblical reasons are far more important than the biblical Zionist reasons of Israel's existence.
Well, and I haven't forgotten about your intellectual colleague, your friend in academia over there, who said that there wasn't a way to there isn't a way to make a non-religious argument for them. Well, at the time when we discussed this, I started in 1948 and went forward through the UN resolutions where there was a parlay at the table. Whether you think the state of Israel should exist and how it came about, forget that for a second. There was an attempt at a parlay between Israel and their Arab neighbors and said, hey, look, and the Palestinians hey, at different times, here's a portion of Jerusalem, here's the West Bank, here's the Gaza Strip. And every time, no matter the variables inserted, and to include when the country was first founded, it was always, nope. And when the country was first founded, it was, no, we're going to wipe Israel off the map. Don't worry. Y'all can come in and take over after it's over.
It
clearly didn't work out that way. That's
no,
why
it did not.
You know, the Six-Day War was just that. It was like pistol whipping a blind kid. The reality is there were multiple opportunities for there to be a peace deal brokered here. Ehud Barak lost his election for how far he went in an attempt of accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of whether the state of Israel should exist or not, forgetting that for a second, I'm not really sure what people expect of the Jewish state other than to completely dismantle and to allow whatever happens from the spiritual successors of Yasser Arafat to be inflicted upon them. I'm not really sure what the end game here is.
Yeah.
You know, Jerusalem was declared an international city by the United Nations. I mean, it was outrageous.
Yeah, I'm certainly not saying that there should not be an Israeli state. That's not it at all. I just try to come to the table with as many perspectives as I can, because in terms of the Israeli conflict, the Israeli nation, everything surrounding Israel, it is very much anti or pro. And it's hard for me to pick a camp, because I do realize all the factors that have gone into this. And
why should this issue be any different? That's how we are in every issue in our society. Every issue is a litmus test now.
Oh, 100%.
There's no discussing. There's, except on the Mod State podcast, and folks, I would love to find out where the other sources are. So if you're saying, nah, well, then please message us, modstate@modstate.com, right on Podomatic, whatever. Figure it out. Let us know where the other sources of this are, because last I checked, we're the only ones who can sit and have a rational discussion, say, about President Donald John Trump, to the best of our abilities, going through his policy proposals, the election, collusion, SAD, etc., without getting ad hominem, without getting personal, staying focused on the facts. I mean, there would be aneurysms and cocaine habits developed if you tried to merge the crews of CNN and Fox News for a night to have this discussion. They couldn't do it.
Oh, God. Well, and I agree. And beyond that,
anything.
Yeah. Beyond that, I look to 2020. Let's pretend, and this goes beyond the Golan Heights. This goes to a number of things that the President of the United States has done. And and gone against sort of precedent and what it would take if hypothetically a Democrat wins in 2020, there's a number of things that the president has done, whether, you know, some we agree with, some we don't, in terms of the Iranian nuclear deal, the Paris Climate Agreement, and now the Golan Heights, that what happens when a new fresh face comes in who is fairly opposed to every single one of these things, where does America go from here? And it isn't that I'm certainly not advocating against making like positive radical policy changes, but in the things, and domestically, I mean, I think we can fix domestic issues. We can come to, we're not messing with as many allies, but he's made a number of really big foreign relation changes in terms of these three specific things. And even the embassy being moved to Jerusalem, which is probably less strategic and important as opposed to in relation to the validation of the Golan Heights. That where, if you are opposed to these things, these three or four things, where does one walk back from this, or how does that happen? And how do we reinstate what would have been sort of like normal precedent, if that's even a thing, normal precedent of, because it certainly is interesting. It's creating an interesting framework for 2020 and beyond. And, you know, the other thing too about the Golan Heights is there's two paths to quote unquote peace here, right? There's the status quo and trying to work towards peace that way. But then there's this sort of peace by force. And that would be like validating the Golan Heights and giving more security to Israel. That would somehow, is that a path? For some people, that's a path to peace because it's a path of like force to peace. And to others, it just sort of demantles the entire thing. And I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I think there's been a loss of cohesion, of focus in general on the broader issues. We've lost sight of, and particularly in the media, I say we loosely there because we're not mainstream, no matter our worth. I don't think we're going to ever be mainstream. But the entire ability to focus on a narrative and have any sort of discussion whatsoever has been lost. And just, I'm sorry, if you could hit pause and just and rephrase. I'm sorry, I lost you. I was trying to take a note what the latter portion of your question was.
No, you're good. It was an ambiguous question. It literally was, how does the Golan Heights literally like work towards peace in the region? And some people say that it doesn't. It doesn't create.
Right. I was trying to write down my, I got a cramp in my hand.
No worries. You know, or is this, does this demantle any peace talks, or is this more like peace by force, that more security for Israel essentially means a locking out of the peace talks, or in a way gives me
3-2-1 this.
All right, hold on. All right, your hand cramp is a little better. So
yeah, I don't like it. I don't like your attitude right now.
I'm sorry.
Your words are hurtful. But no, I think there's going to be a geopolitical argument. Politico's already hit on this, that this doesn't help the cause. That there's going to be president, whoever the president is in the future, whoever the gatekeeper is, the commander in chief, is going to have some rather irritated Arab allies to deal with. But I don't posit this. First and foremost, let's not consider whether the geopolitical ramifications for a second when we look at, I don't know, whether or not it's the right thing to do. I think a little element of that, when applied to our foreign policy, could help us perhaps avoid some of the blunders we've had in the past. Now, the question would be whether it's the right thing to do. That's a different discussion altogether. The other, I would say that America will, of course, I know you're not saying this is an existential crisis, but America will definitely go on, even if you view this as a negative, because we did recover from James Earl Carter Jr., okay? Someone who wore a cardigan on television to try and ease a national energy crisis, telling Americans to consume less. Okay, are you high? Like right now, Jimmy? Americans consume less. So the reality is, we made his mishandling of the Iranian crisis in 1979. I mean, any bells going off here?
Mm-hmm.
We made it.
Yeah.
Even if you view this as a mistake, if it's strictly symbolic, because the Politico story I found comical, not in a way they would appreciate, because on one hand, they argued this is purely symbolic, of no consequence whatsoever. But then, on the other side of their mouth, went on to say that, well, this could pose serious ramifications in the future in dealing with our Arab allies. Well, which the hell is it then? Mm. I mean, that's one reason, as I've said before, I've always liked Greta, because she doesn't speak out of both sides of her mouth, you know? Yeah. But seriously, it's... I don't think this is existential, no. I think it's something... Sure, we're going to have, if you will, regime change here. This is...
Well, and
small fry in a way, it just seems like one amongst the many areas in which we're going to have a whiplash.
I think, too, and of note, is that just because the President of the United States has validated Israel's claim to the Golan Heights, it really, I mean, that's northern Israel. It really is different from what's going on in Gaza. It's different from what's going on
In Alabama, where Doug Jones is worried about re-election.
It's a different topic altogether with Israel. Does it make it seem that the president favors Israel more than it does the Palestinian group? As if he didn't, and we didn't know that already, it isn't some shocker. It's a reality that he's very pro-Israel. But again, I do see the other side of it too. I do see that as a strategic point, and I do see if Russia and Iran is building up in Syria, that in Israel would be concerned about that. And I think most people should be concerned about that as well. I mean,
it's a representative democracy in the Middle East. Even if it's the Sikhs or Rastafarians, okay? Forget religion for a minute here, okay? The reality is, it's not something that we can send back. It's not something we can turn our backs on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technically we could. We could also switch off the intranets. You know, there's a lot of things that we could physically do. Is it something that's going to be beneficial to us? Again, some folks are going to see this as Politico argued that this is detrimental to American foreign policy, that, you know, President Joe Biden or President Cory Booker or President Kamala Harris would have a hell of a time unwinding any of this.
Yes.
Following the tail back to the dog that wagged it. The reality is, again, if we can recover from the disaster that was the Carter foreign policy, I think we got this.
Yeah.
Regardless, if you see it as a bad thing.
Yes.
I'll tell you that nobody feared Jimmy Carter. Okay.
No.
Globally, they may not really like the man. They may think he's crazy, and you could make a good case for this. But there is reason to be afraid, in foreign policy terms, geopolitically, of a President Donald Trump.
Hmm.
Like him or not.
Like him or not.
Something else. Look at the company he keeps. I mean, hey, Kim Jong-un writes in beautiful love letters. You got to be worried about that.
Oof. Well, let's move now briefly. I don't know when either of these episodes, the last one or today, will air. If you're listening to it now, then you know in which order it is. But right now, it's a mystery to me. Let's spend just 7 minutes talking about Jesse Smollett of Empire being exonerated of all charges.
Oh my God.
What, 16 felony charges on faking a hate crime, essentially?
Now, yeah. Yeah. 16.
Look, we didn't talk about it. Well, maybe we did. We briefly talked about it actually on one episode.
But I think via text.
No. I think we actually talked about on an episode. And right. And I think we talked about this was at the time, and we didn't spend that much time on it because we're like, wow, this guy's an asshole. And we didn't talk about it after that because asshole was gonna get what he got coming, right? Well, apparently not.
Wrong.
Apparently not. Apparently, and I guess we just don't know what the deal was. But there was a deal made, to let him walk, and it was interesting. It's the chief of police came out, Emmanuel came out, the mayor of Chicago, and just lampooned this decision, as if I'm kind of baffled by the entire thing, and maybe I'll learn more over the next couple days, but it seems like no one was consulted, or maybe that's just because they don't have to be. And they let him walk. They kept the $10,000 bail, and the dude doesn't even have to do community service. And I think the sentiment from those leaders in Chicago have to be true.
It's outrage.
They literally said, we're now the laughingstock. This sets a precedent for any LGBTQ, person of color, women, children, or men for that matter, that come forward and say, I've been a victim of a hate crime. And they will be met with doubt. And beyond that, that we just don't really care about this. We don't care about bad people doing bad things. We let them walk. And more specifically, that this person's, and dare I say this, privilege as a successful individual has possibly granted his a complete exoneration of this, which... Who knows?
Come on, don't tell me you're not looking at this in agreement with Black Twitter saying this is the gay OJ.
I guess I didn't even go to Black Twitter. Is that what it's saying?
Well, that's one of the latest from Miss Ashley Ray, and I got to say I agree.
I guess it's true. It seems like, I guess I don't know. I'm completely confused by it.
No time is a good time to falsely accuse anyone of a hate crime, a capital crime of that.
Well, let alone not accusing somebody of it, but fabricating the entire thing.
Right. First of all, saying there were two white guys when surveillance showed pretty quickly it was two darker individuals who've now been identified as Nigerians. To then the whole "this is MAGA country" quote. You know, you went to great lengths, and the superintendent of police, Mr. Johnson of Chicago, pointed out something. He said, look, okay, so Mr. Smollett had to forfeit his $10,000 bail. Wah. I mean, he didn't say the wah part, but
look at
how much money we spent looking up the surveillance, sending officers to investigate, using resources that we could have been using, I don't know, legitimate cases for something that, beyond that, you set back civil rights causes in this country exponentially.
Yeah.
In cases of legitimate hate crimes. Yeah. Now, this is one more case where people are going, see playing the race card, playing the bigot card. And I mean, what, two guys with, this is MAGA country, we're just waiting on you with a noose and freezing Chicago weather. Well, and come to find out they're not even white.
It really goes to show how detached he was from reality in terms of, like, that, whatever insular circle he is in.
Well, he's too much of a dumbass to come out and claim that he's a method actor.
Well,
at least then we could say, hey, you were experimenting with something. All right, you're sick. You need to keep that, you need to secure that shit.
Yeah.
But
it literally is just shows how insular and detached he is from reality, that really is the way.
He's held accountable by it.
Yeah, that too. So it's
bringing him down to earth to reality. This is an outrage. I really don't see the folks that are defending him, aside from hardcore fanboys or fangirls, whatever label, and those who simply are going to side with a person that happens to fit within the greater pantheon of their particular movement.
Well,
that's the way I see you defending him.
In terms of identity politics, I don't know that there are too many people who are jumping on his bandwagon at all. I think that's been fairly clear. I think everyone realized they sort of made a mistake, jumped to conclusions in the first place. And if anything, I think it's positive that these things, not his case specifically, but to watch people who want narratives, watch them have to retract really quickly. And it just
teaches, not a good period of time for the mainstream media.
No, it teaches people a little bit of emotional intelligence. And I think we need a little bit of that, because as of right now, it's been the Wild West in terms of emotional intelligence. You just kind of anything you feel like saying because it fits your narrative, and you're an asshole or a racist if you or a Nazi if you're against it. And in this case, I think it's actually been beneficial in terms of checking people before they jump to conclusions. Now, that doesn't change the fact that the sad part of this is that this individual has just kind of ruined it for a lot of people, and has wasted a lot of resources and is walking free. I'll be curious to see how this guy makes it back, if he does at all. It sounds like he needs to start a charity or something like that. I'm not entirely sure how he redeems himself in the public.
That's it. Yes. I want him having access to donor dollars. That's weak.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what does one do to make their way back? Like, do you go check into rehab, or like what's if you're a PR firm, one of those rich clientele PR firms, like how do you market this? Do you just stay shut up for a year?
I think so. I think it's like being zapped into one of the witches on Charm just turned you into a fat, tiny, flying, naked IRS agent. It reduced your marketability in a big way. It's probably time to just, hey, dude, you should probably lay low for a while. I think you killed a guy.
Yeah, you should just, yeah, right, exactly.
Where'd you find a grenade?
Yeah, exactly. Where'd you find a grenade? Oh, gosh.
We're there, though. I mean, and the media's had a hell of a run. You know, from the DC monument crisis, manufactured crisis, or at least manipulated crisis, to no collusion, sad, to, you know, this has been a great era.
Oh, God. Even that. How about Stormy Daniels? How could I forget?
You sent me that. Holy
crap. Like, how could, like, for all really, like, conservatives, right, who are tired of being called MAGA, like racist assholes, and who have watched their president being drugged through the mud, that in a matter of like 72 hours, well, the Jussie Smollett thing is not a win. However, it is kind of a ironic, like you could definitely create some political fodder from it, but the president gets exonerated and then Michael Avenatti is arrested for extortion from Nike. Like, how do you, but then the president of the United States decides he wants to just destroy the ACA. Like, how much, we have so much shit to talk about all the time.
You couldn't cram any more in. Hold my beer.
Okay.
That's basically what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Now, okay.
Except he doesn't drink.
Yeah, the one thing I didn't call, however, and people can call bullshit on it, and that's fine.
Just one.
I had a visceral reaction a long time ago when that guy got on TV, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, former lawyer. He got on TV over and over and over, and there's just something about these, like, white dudes recently.
Now you're being like the mom after the breakup or divorce.
I know,
like,
but
you, I never liked him.
But no, it wasn't. It's not now. It was then. There was this sort of feeling I got that this guy was so bold and sort of shady, kind of slimy, Las Vegas lawyer type, where you're like, dude, I wouldn't be surprised if in like 6 months this dude, something comes up. Like, maybe it's some weird.
You started to make a racial point. I'm sorry.
No, there was no racial point. I just said, well, you look at like
these white guys.
Well, look, Manafort, Cohen, Roger Stone, Michael Avenatti.
Manafort was orange.
Well, not as orange as the president, but I guess that's my point. Like, in the grand scheme of things, it's like you get one more, even Carter Page going on CNN, I think it was, and he's obviously never been charged with anything, but you're like, dude, like, this guy is talking so much.
Where's Richard Spencer when we need it?
Don't be surprised if like 6 months down the road, we find out that, oh, he extorted Nike for $20 million. He's going to jail for that. Like,
how did a porn star's lawyer get wrapped up with Nike?
All right. So the way it goes.
You sponsor it.
Yeah. No. So the way it goes is they allegedly found some sort of dirt on Nike. And I don't know what it was. I don't think it matters. But they went to Nike and said, if you don't want us to run with this, or if you want us to keep this to ourselves, you got to pay us $20 million. And Nike was
National Enquirer. Yeah.
So Nike was like, nope. And went to the FBI and was like, yep, look at, we're being extorted right now.
Works for Packer and the Enquirer.
Like, holy crap. You're a lawyer. Like, how did you think that extortion, I mean, of a multinational billions of dollars company.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
I guess that's got to be the only reasonable explanation, is that cocaine is a hell of a drug.
There's something rotten in Denmark there.
Good night. Well, with that, my friend, we're over our 30-minute mark. As always, it's an honor and a pleasure to do these with you week in and week out. And until
absolutely, yeah. It's a real honor. Looking forward to to more of this chaos, more of the vermin inheriting the earth.
Indeed, indeed. So, well, my friend, until next time,
au revoir.
We'll see you.